is Thursday, January 23rd, and this is another edition of No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, Bob Page. Super Bowl is still, what, 10 days away. We're going to talk a little bit about quarterbacks. We're going to talk a little bit about Michigan basketball, about Antonio Brown. On and on it goes. So many great. And we're going to have Mark Howe, the great Mark Howe.
We are.
One of the two greatest families in hockey history, the Hulls and the Howes. We're going to talk to him. Let's get started with the Hall of Fame. Not to say about the Hall of Fame. Baseball and football both kind of announced them at the same time. And Derek Jeter was on the first ballot Hall of Famer and made it on every ballot but one. 396 out of 397. Now, does that mean...
What's the big deal?
Now, my question is, and I should know the answer to this. Does that mean that he wasn't any of the 15 that were mentioned? Or he wasn't mentioned first? Because I think you
have to be number one on all the ballots.
Is it number one or just on the ballot of the
15? You have to be voted into the Hall of Fame. You have to be mentioned. Yes, he goes into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I here's my take on this, guys.
Stop.
And I haven't seen anybody.
Bob,
go ahead.
Bob, the question was...
Right.
Are you just on everybody's ballot? Can you be the 15th guy mentioned on the ballot?
No.
And that means, or do you have to be the number? They don't think they mention them in order. They just mention the guys that they want to vote on. It's the percentage of ballots that you're on. So my impression is that somebody left him off the ballot entirely. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I believe that's the case.
Well, we'll check it.
Okay.
Yeah, he didn't vote him into the Hall of Fame. It's like it was in Russia when you and I were boys growing up and they had an election, quote unquote. Khrushchev, yes. Khrushchev, no. That was the election ballot in Russia when we were kids.
Well, then that's unusual that you wouldn't appear at all on one ballot. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a personal agenda.
It's a personal thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it has to be a personal thing because there isn't anybody that I can think of in recent years that deserved to be 100% of the vote.
Or that isn't one of the top 15 guys that you could vote on. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
It just has to be.
I started to say, here's my take on this, okay? And I haven't seen anybody mention this, and we still don't know the identity of this one writer who didn't vote for Jeter. It is always fun to have baseball arguments, but I believe there can be no arguments about the greatest player in the history of the game at two positions. Number one, at third base, he didn't make it out. He didn't make it.
Here we go. We don't know who it is now. Bob's going to keep going, and at the end of the story, he's going
to
tell us who it is.
Make a point.
Okay, here we go.
Are you uptight again today? I haven't had a tweet from a guy this morning. I hope Eli won't be as uptight today when you guys do this show. He's already jumping.
Go ahead. Keep talking, and then at the end, let us know who you're talking about.
What I'm trying to make is this, fellas. Mike Schmidt is the greatest all-around third baseman who ever lived, all right? Yeah. And the greatest relief pitcher is obviously Mariano Rivera. Now, since Jeter was not the greatest shortstop who ever lived, though I guess you could argue that, somebody said he doesn't deserve to be 100% the way Rivera did. That's all I'm thinking.
Yeah. Well, maybe so.
Well, you know what?
That's an interesting point.
The percentages, I think, are a little bit silly. Listen, he got everything he ever started out with in Major League Baseball, starting with an $800,000 bonus. The other thing, too, is did you know that our guy, Hal Newhouser, recommended him to the Houston Astros when they were getting ready to sign him?
No
and
kidding.
The Houston sure did. And the Astros said to him, we don't need him. We got a ball club now in place right now. And then he went to the Yankees and got his $800,000.
Wait a minute.
Who'd they draft?
That's not 100%. What Hal said to the Astros is, you take this kid number one overall or I quit. They didn't.
Who'd they take?
And he did. The Astros weren't the only club that missed in 1992. The Astros pick, Phil Nevin. It was a pretty good Major League Baseball player.
Oh, Phil Nevin. He played here for a little while. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he was on Derek Jeter.
Well,
the first five picks in that draft, Phil Nevin, then Paul Shuey, B.J. Wallace, Jeffrey Hammonds, Chad Mottola, or Mottola.
My goodness, that is some serious missing going on. Well, I guess, you know, as Denny and his Bears know, they could have had Patrick Mahomes and they took Mitch Trubisky.
Isn't that something? I get sick on every day. God almighty.
Mahomes didn't go till 10.
Denny mentioned a local angle with Hal Newhouser. I want to talk about another local angle. Dick Groce helped the Yankees sign Derek. When, as a Kalamazoo native, Derek, you guys know this, he'd already accepted a scholarship to play at Michigan. Now, I umpired a number of St. Clair County Community College games when I was still a college student. Dick was the head coach there. You guys know Dick Groce or not?
No, I know Dick Groce.
Dick was the head coach there. He was a terrific coach who built a tremendous national program. Now, there was a big feature on Dick who's also been an MLB scout for a long time, in the New York Post sports section Tuesday, the Detroit News had one too, and it's nice to see Dick Groce at 79 getting all this recognition for Derek Jeter. He also developed players like ex-Tigers Bill Nahorodny, Bill Fahey, Bob Adams, Adkins coached him at Redford, and Jeff Jones, Tigers all.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I just thought it was great that Dick got some publicity. I didn't think it was great that all these Detroit Tigers fans and embittered Michigan people are on Twitter saying, oh, well, you know, Jeter was overrated. I'd take Alan Trammell ahead of Derek Jeter any day.
Oh, you're out of your mind.
What?
You're out of your mind.
That's a New York prejudice.
Listen, that's kind of, but you'd be surprised at this.
You know what, Bob? They were relatively close to each other. But Derek Jeter, and this is where he gets the big bump. He played in New York.
Yep.
He went up against the media in New York. He never made a mistake with the media. He waited until the final moment to marry a nice girl and have babies and everything else. He did everything perfectly right. And I'm not saying that our shortstop didn't do the same thing, but he wasn't the kind of guy, flamboyant to a degree, that Jeter was. So, I mean, come on. There's no comparison when it comes to that type of personality.
But more than that, he wasn't as good a player as Derek Jeter was.
And you're right. And that's the sad thing about it.
That's my point.
Why do we have to get into, when somebody says something like that, which they shouldn't have said, to now have to denigrate Trammell at all, who was a
And we're not denigrating him.
But I'm saying, if you're forced to compare him to Jeter, who had almost 3,600 hits, sixth all-time, won five World Series, you know, then it's just not fair to make the comparison.
And I cannot tell you how difficult it is to play in New York, even as a visiting club.
For sure.
Those people, you're always looking for bottles coming your way. You're looking for rocks coming your way. These guys really
come
pull.
On.
Are you serious?
No.
Talk to Kaline. Talk to Northrop. Talk to Horton.
In fact, it is as serious as
a heart attack.
And if we segue into Eli Manning, who's retiring in New York and played in the little era slightly after Derek Jeter, although they did overlap for a while. You're either reviled or you're a hero, and they turn on you in a moment.
The fact
that Derek Jeter was able to be Teflon all those years is a lot of credit.
And then I take exception to one thing. Somebody wrote a column, a story online someplace that said that what baseball needs now, thank God, is Derek Jeter. This is not the 1919 White Sox. I don't even understand the purpose, because when you read the story, it said nothing about what he was going to do to save Major League Baseball.
Well, he's certainly not saving the Marlins. He certainly is.
And Denny, by the way, I was a member of the New York Yankees broadcast crew for 10 years in New York, and a member of the New York media. You really, really overrated it. And you really kind of, there's a lot of hyperbole there about how tough it is to play in New York.
Bob, you never played in New York except in a broadcast, and it's two different
worlds.
No,
but I worked in New York, and you didn't play in New York either, pal.
Well, you know, I never got released in New York.
All right, now, boys. This is
over
really
my head
important.
For a second there. Very good.
All right, now, boys, this is important. Now, let's look ahead, can we?
Sure.
These are the top guys who will be the first-year eligibles for the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2021. You ready for this?
Go ahead.
Four guys. Tim Hudson, Barry Zito, Mark Burley, and Torrey Hunter. Thus, the obvious answer, men, in 2021, there will be no Hall of Fame inductions or ceremony because nobody deserves to make it. You know what's scary?
Kurt Schilling,
in his 10th year of eligibility,
God forbid,
got 70% of the vote. That guy is not a Hall of Fame pitcher, and he's going to go into the Hall of Fame next year. So why is a guy not good enough to be voted into the Hall, and then suddenly, lo and behold, he is, as Schilling will be next year? It's a joke.
Well, I'm going to tell you what.
Time out.
Hang on one second. He may not get in either, and I'll tell you why, but go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that first of all, the four guys you mentioned aren't Hall of Famers, so it doesn't matter.
No way.
But people who have been on the ballot can then be elevated to be Hall of Famers.
Absolutely.
Somebody will go in. And, you know, well, we can argue Schilling's record. By the way, Schilling should be voted into the Hall of Fame based on his record, not his off-the-field lunacy, which many people think. Just like, and I'm going to give you an example. I don't want to get too far off the base here. But Paul Tagliabue was just put into the Hall of Fame. And Paul Tagliabue, the former NFL commissioner, was the guy who presided over the whole CTE thing, yep. pushed it under the table, ignored it, called it mild at first, created committees only belatedly when he was forced, and then regretted later on that he had helped sweep it under the thing. And yet he goes into the Hall of Fame. So he's in the Hall of Fame because he helped the growth of football, not because of
what he did for the players.
The dastardly deeds that he helped promote for the players.
And I'll give you a little prediction, which I hope does not come true. You may see a Roger Clemens or a Barry Bonds get into the Hall of Fame.
Yes, you're right.
And that will
be creeping up.
That will be a mortal sin if you're a Catholic.
Yes, you're right.
And therefore, you shall never eat meat again on Friday.
Or have premarital sex.
Or premarital. Well, let's not go that far.
All right. So now,
sex. What's sex?
I was going to say my Catholic friend Ryan Field, who now has my old job at Channel 7 in New York. He fancied himself quite the ladies' man. And at one point, I see he's about his mid-30s, and I go, "So Ryan, you're a good Catholic. So in other words, you do not engage in premarital sex."
We don't do religion on this show. Please don't get me started.
Anyway, he says, "Yeah, but the fact is, I don't eat meat on Friday, so he's kind of had the smorgasbord." In any case,
started to say, Eli has been with me on this all the way. Denny, you have not. And Denny, I told you, and then I told you again. In the near future, there will be no more umpires in baseball. It'll be computerized. Mm-hmm. Rob Manfred announced this week that MLB plans to use a computerized umpiring system to call balls and strikes now, this year in spring
training. Not in the major leagues.
In spring training,
saying that the camera-based system will be more accurate than a human being standing there. He also said on a Fox Business Show interview that baseball would start using the camera system for balls and strikes in some minor leagues this year. They're experimenting in spring training, Danny, and you're going to see it in Major League Baseball.
I said they were experimenting. I said they were experimenting in minor league baseball, too. I think they're going to use AAA in some teams to experiment also. But that doesn't mean it's coming in, Bob.
Lot
of things. It's like stealing first base. You think they'll ever steal first base?
That's not like that, Danny. No, I don't think it's quite like that.
Well, I'm just comparing it to what it's going to look like.
We are all victims and beneficiaries of the technology. I've said this many, many times.
Not going to happen.
With pass interference, with what is a catch. Those are vague rules, but the technology is perfect. If they perfect the technology of what a ball and what a strike is, and by the way, the conversation you had with Larry Sorensen on our show was very, very interesting, because Larry was saying a lot of times that ball may go through the strike zone or appear to, and I don't know how accurate, but I imagine if it's perfect accuracy, wouldn't you prefer that as a pitcher, to not have to figure out what the umpire is calling? Wouldn't you like to know that if you hit the corner, you're going to get credit for it? How frustrating it must be. I watch pitchers pitch and go, wait a minute, it was 2 inches outside, they call it a strike, or then it was 2 inches inside, they call it a ball. How frustrating that must be. And I give credit to pitchers. They never glare at the umpire. Right. They never stomp their feet, you know, and pick their hands up.
I would love to go back and get the strikes that were missed, that just caught part of the plate that I pitched. Yeah. I'd have 10 million strikeouts. So will every other pitcher.
Well, how about the balls, though? There were balls that were called strikes also.
Yes,
so
that's
course,
true, too.
Of course. And I think there's a more likelihood that the mistake's going to be made with balls than strikes. Hmm. Absolutely. But you know what? We're going to see what happens. They're going to test it probably for a long time. It's not going to happen in a year. It's not going to happen in 2 years. But they're going to take
it. It's going
to
happen within 5 years or 10 years.
I don't think so.
And Denny, the reason it's not going to be that egregious, as you seem to think, is that the umpire will still be there saying, strike! Ball, because he's going to be told it's going to look
yes,
the same.
Absolutely.
It's
going
to look
that.
The same, so it isn't just. We just have to stop the game for 4 minutes and look at a replay.
No, not to look at a replay, but he can also overrule the application.
Okay. All right. Well, that'd be interesting. I don't see how.
I mean, Denny, if I'd have told you during your heyday as a player of the late '60s that you would live to see the day where a specialist, a surgeon in Boston, would do a highly complex operation on a patient in Chicago using robotic arms and video, you would have said, no way. Come on, Danny, it's technology. This is going to be in within 5 or 10 years.
I use a lot of technology every day with what I do. And you know what? I'm not complicated by it. I'm not confused by it. I love it. I just like to be able to use it more and more and more. I mean, we got these cell phones that'll do 1,000 different things. And you know, how many things do we really use them for? Three, four, five?
I don't know.
You
know, whoever I use them for, the person. Pretty important.
Hey, do you two gamblers know what the William Hill sports book is?
Yeah, it's based in England, right?
Good. Well, yeah, whatever. So anyway, they're out. I didn't, but they're out with their Major League Baseball predictions for this coming season. How many games do they predict the Detroit Tigers will win?
Let's see. They lost 114.
Well, I'll tell you.
54. 54.
Good. That's a great guess. Yeah. 55.
They won 48 last year. Okay. Yeah.
Right. So at what point are we talking about potential long-term damage to the Tigers? Now, if they do go 55-107, there won't be anybody in the stands by July.
Nobody.
If parents lose interest, so do their kids, because there's so many other entertainment options now.
They'll fall off. They've already fallen off the map.
Right.
So it's like they're already off the map. But I'll remind you that they had this after they won in 84 and won in 87. And after 88, where they were over 500, they went into this incredible tailspin at 89. That lasted a long time. Almost, remember we used to talk about the fact that kids growing up in Detroit didn't experience any Tiger success. All they know is this is a losing team. Well, as soon as they were successful in 05 and 06, with Verlander and other guys and Pudge Rodriguez and Magno, and suddenly everybody came to the ballpark. So they will be back, just no matter how long they'll be back and how much they suffer until they do come back.
But it's different than 1989. That was 30 years ago. Kids have all these different things going on. It's a joke to say, for those who still actually do say it, that baseball is our national pastime. It's not.
Well,
the NFL is. And beyond that, there's so many kids who have no interest in baseball. You look at all these signings that the Tigers have announced recently. Just Tweedledee, Tweedledum, never was, as has been, untried kids. Maybe the Tigers get lucky with one or two. But I don't think anybody's excited about this team.
No.
And here comes Anthony Fenech in the Detroit Free Press with this headline. Jake Rogers looks like everyday catcher. He is the fourth most important future, claims the Free Press, for the future. This kid hit 125 last year and didn't wow anybody with his arm or his defense.
Well, before you start worrying about catchers, you better worry about pitchers. When they sign a guy like Hector Santiago with an ERA over 5, he's 32 years old, and he used to be in a 5-man rotation. Now he's long-term middle relief, they say. Come on. I mean, there has to be a more serious attempt at putting a ball club together. They still have not recognized the idea. You got to have a little nucleus, whether it's one guy, two guys, three guys, to build around. They don't have anybody they can build around. Nobody.
Well, they're spending $60 million this year on Jordan Zimmermann and Miguel Cabrera. Your point about baseball is true, because even now, as awful as the Lions were, every day is a headline. Hey, are they going to pick Tua?
Yeah.
Are they going to pick a number three? And there's the NFL. But, you know, that's changing too. A lot of parents not letting their kids play football. And I brought it up earlier. I don't want to dwell on it, but the whole CTE thing, after watching the Aaron Hernandez thing, after the Luke Kuechly thing. In fact, on the Aaron Hernandez thing, they talked to this Chris Borland,
right,
who played at Wisconsin, played 1 year in the NFL, and said, you know, there's just too much of this going on. I think I'm going to back off rather than risk my long-term health. And so football, I think, will always be around, but the field of where their players are going to come from may be smaller.
And I saw the Hernandez thing for the first time. I watched all 3.5 hours last night. And I got to tell you something. When they, at the end of the show, when they were going over his CTE, they said it was the most progressed, worst case of CTE they had ever seen.
For someone that young.
For someone that young. It was shocking. But they were also, to some degree, trying to, you know, defend this guy a little bit. You killed three people.
You
don't need any defense.
It's a controversial. It's a controversial documentary.
Well, from a personal standpoint, boys, I am happy that I will never live to see the day when soccer becomes our national pastime.
Because
it will.
It will not.
But no time soon.
It will not. It will not.
Not a chance.
There will be no great sport in this country that doesn't require you to use your hands. We are a ball sport country where hand-eye coordination is key. Yeah. Is that corny? Well, so is to say, do you want 20/20 vision in 2020? But the fact is, you can have it and get rid of those glasses and
that
contacts.
That was a weak segue, reading, don't you think, Denny?
And reading glasses forever. Maybe so. Sometimes I come up with a weak segue just to get you guys to pause for just a moment. Anyway, for 2 years now, our listeners here, and those of the Drew and Mike Show since we joined the Red Shovel Network, have been going to see Dr. Yaldo by the hundreds. Yes, over 100. The 100 and 200 have gone and gotten surgery. Dr. Yaldo examines your eyes up to a dozen different ways. He'll determine your particular issues, and he will not touch your eyes unless you are a perfect candidate, whether it's custom LASIK that'll give you 20/20 or better in most cases without glasses and contacts, or multifocal lens implants, which I got when I eventually contracted cataracts later on. I didn't say late in life, later on in my life. Anyway, he is the number one in Michigan for good reason. He gives the people the gift of great vision. So make the call, understand what will be required to rid you of glasses, contacts, and those ugly reading glasses, and decide for yourself. 1-800-398-EYES, 800-398-EYES. Or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. And now another Red Shovel sponsor, Denny.
Absolutely. Hall Financial. They've got a couple of questions for our listeners this morning. Are you paying more than 4% on your mortgage? Do you have a lingering high interest rate credit card debt? You may or may not know that right now rates are within fractions of a percentage point of their lows of the past 10 years. A smart idea right now today would be to call the company with over 1,000 five-star reviews that has recently been averaging 10 days from the start to finish on our listeners that have applied for a refi on their mortgage and at Hall Financial. It's a simple process, and it's quick, and it's no secret that saving money is smart. Hall Financial, as I said, has nearly 1,000 five-star reviews from their clients for a reason. If you want to check to see if something makes sense for you, to go to David Hall and DavidHallMortgage.com. Get started by calling 248-308-5000. That's 248-308-5000. And make sure to tell them, I sent you, me and Eli. Equal housing lender, NMLS 1467435. Hi, Bob.
You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
David Hall is going to think that I don't like him. That's no, a lie. Apologize right now.
I know. I'm going to send you a copy. I'm going to give you a chance to do the Hall read next show.
No, you're not.
Boy, give my big break reading
I'll give
commercial.
You a different one then. Okay, I'll give you a different one. Anyway, so there's many directions to go here. Talk about Michigan basketball. Can talk about how about if we segue into that incredible fight that happened two nights ago. Let's listen to it when Kansas and Kansas State met in the closing seconds of the game. They were down 81-60, Kansas State was, and the Jayhawks were dribbling out the clock when DeJuan Gordon of Kansas State stole the ball from Silvio D'Souza, went down to make a layup, and then Souza came down, blocked the shot, stood over him, and a melee began. Let's listen to the announcers who watched it in utter disbelief.
And a block to finish. And D'Souza blocks it, and now the bench is empty. Just unnecessary.
Yep. That's not good.
This is bad.
This is
No good. Oh, this is terrible.
There are going to be ramifications for this going forward.
And it's just no point to it.
They couldn't believe what was going on, and neither could we. But, you know, both teams are really at fault. Any thoughts about that?
I don't understand what the brouhaha is. To me,
I don't either.
I saw this. This was just a good-natured row at the end of the game.
Good-natured?
You had one student athlete, D'Souza, who's majoring in quantum mechanics, block the shot of another student athlete who was then knocked to the floor. Then he stood over him, wolfing with a finger in the face of the other student athlete. This was undoubtedly just a simple disagreement they'd had with respect to some abstruse concept in ontology. Now, many other student athletes then chose sides, and they joined in the spirited debate. And all the TV basketball shills were wringing their hands. Oh, there's no place for this in college basketball. What do they expect? So many of these kids come from violent inner-city backgrounds, but in D'Souza's case, he's actually from Angola. Now, how on earth could he possibly have a good enough command of the English language? He never came to the U.S. till the start of high school to be accepted at a major U.S. university. Now, fellas, get this. During the October 2018 college basketball corruption trial of two Adidas officials and an aspiring NBA agent, it was alleged that D'Souza's guardian had accepted, quote unquote, $60,000 from an unnamed Maryland booster to steer D'Souza to that program. And then there was all kinds of other money involved being funneled to this guy before D'Souza committed to Kansas. It's just mind-boggling to see this stuff.
This is the game.
Well, this is the game.
By the way, that was only that came out because of the FBI probe. The NCAA would have never uncovered any of this stuff. That's the huge FBI probe that took the most notorious. It took Rick Pitino down in Louisville, and of course, Bill Self, the great Kansas coach. It's revealed, lack of institutional control. all that stuff. He appealed the decisions, and they suspend the guy, and they bring him back. And now he's suspended again for hoisting a chair in that brawl that Bob just mentioned. But, you know, is that classic WWE? I mean, picking the chair up, the folding chair to put in a fight, that's like red meat.
Except for one thing, WWE is fake.
But it's like Bobby Knight throwing this chair across the court.
Kind of at somebody.
Well, listen, all it's got to do is bounce once and get somebody. But listen, there's cash all over the NCAA, number one. And some guy coming up from Angola, don't use that as a defense that he doesn't understand that somebody's going to want. Listen, a fight starts and you lose a fight as soon as the guy hits you in the nose. You know that, right? Once you get hit in the nose, you're lost because you can't see.
As Mike Tyson says, everybody got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Exactly right.
But there's something about picking up the chair that's so different. That's even more so than punches. That makes it look like, you know, it's just.
It's serious.
It's serious. I told you the story when I was at the Ollie Norton fight in Yankee Stadium, where a fight broke out in like the 20th row around the entourage of Slappy White. And once somebody picks a chair up, oh man, it's everybody is watching the fight in the stands, and they're forgetting the fact that there's two guys in the ring that are paid to fight that they don't care about anymore. But this is a song.
Oh, by the way, D'Souza has been suspended 12 games. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
They could have suspended him for the rest of his career if you wanted to. He's only there to play basketball.
And by the way, Danny, whether he's from Angola and speaks English or not, he does only just between 60,000, 80,000, 100,000, or the 40,000 that he turned down
sure
for whatever school offered it to him.
And listen, as we pick up our newspapers or go online every morning, you've got a fight someplace every night. Every night there's another fight
someplace.
Is there
really?
Every night.
What are you talking about?
Every night. It's like McCarty at Evansville University. I don't get what he – McCarty's the head coach.
Walter
at
McCarty.
Evansville. Yeah.
Who, by the way, we were praising him early in the season for the incredible job he'd done at his alma mater, Evansville, after a great career at Kentucky and as an NBA player, and he upset Kentucky – for Evansville, and now after all that praise and all that attention, he's gone.
Yeah, he's been.
Sexual
misconduct with other people around the university. So they suspended him at Christmas time, and now they have said goodbye.
Yeah.
So they have conducted some kind of investigation and found out the complaints are actually real. And he's not going to ever have a job in basketball again, or college, probably.
Who knows? So, Eli, you'll get a kick out of this.
But let me finish. I was going to make a point. We're seeing more and more of that. What I don't understand, doesn't anybody besides us go online and read the newspapers about how unbelievable rampant this stuff is?
Well, Denny, I think the bottom line is we're all human beings and we have urges, and when you are and you think you can get away with it, it's the little head talking.
It's at a university.
Hey, Denny, I got two questions for you before I get back to what I was going to mention, Eli. Denny, did you watch the Michigan-Penn State game Wednesday night?
No.
Okay, well, this is a bad example then. Are you going to watch the Michigan State-Indiana game Thursday night?
Maybe I'll look at it a little bit.
Yeah, sure, I'll watch a little bit of it.
Well, I'm sure as hell going to watch it, and I sure as hell watch a Michigan game. People love college basketball.
No, they do.
That's what's driving this whole nonsense.
Well,
we're not going to stop watching.
I appreciate that, and I accept it. I'm not one of the guys that gets excited about college basketball. I get excited when the playoffs
start.
That's
right. That's what. And this is what's so interesting about last night's game. I watched some of it also, Bob. But when Michigan went on a 6-for-34 shooting stretch, including I think it was 14 misses in a row, that's enough.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch anymore. I can't watch Fritz Wagner throw up 9 3 balls and have one of them go through.
Wasn't he awful?
How about Xavier Simpson, 8 of 23? So there's two sides to Michigan basketball. There's the way that they're 11-7 now, by the way, 2-5. They started out 7-0, so they're 4-7 since that great start. They're 2-5. But here's what Juwan Howard said afterwards. It's January 22nd, just what I said yesterday. It's still the preseason. It doesn't really start, for me, college basketball, till the beginning of February. Then you can see who's got what. The freshmen are a little bit better. But, you know, Michigan, the second side of Michigan basketball is this. They are killing it in recruiting. So for the present, but the future, wow. They got this kid, Jace Howard, this week.
Look how excited Eli is about this. This is his alma mater. This is what's driving college basketball.
And this kid, Josh Christopher, could be the best recruit they've ever gotten.
Exciting.
And Juwan. So they're looking great for the future because of Juwan, and they're awful in the present.
Just hang on a minute. But you guys, I've never seen you go nuts over Michigan before. I never have. I've never seen you jump up and down and start touching yourself.
I like that you're excited that Jace Howard commits to Michigan. Isn't it just Juwan Howard's son?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay.
And of course he's
going to
come.
That was a real shocker, wasn't it? And by the way, think of all the kids, and I mean this sincerely, think of all the kids out there who are getting 4.0s and 1,300 SAT scores, mm-hmm. and they're not good enough to get into the University of Michigan. I'd like to see any term paper that any of these incoming recruits wrote, just to see how well they've mastered, if at all, the English language, and yet they've been admitted to the University of Michigan.
I'll say this. Hang on. Now, this is the best class since the 91 Fab Five. Those were smart kids. Jalen Rose is a really smart guy. Yeah, Chris Webber is a really smart guy that went to a really good high school. Jimmy King is a really smart guy who was a good student.
Jalen Rose went to Detroit Southwestern. What are you talking about?
I'm saying he was a great student at Michigan.
Yeah, you said they went to a really good high school. Webber went to Country Day,
I meant that about Webber went to Country Day.
Well, Joanne, when he said today's January 22nd, I got news for you. All the other teams are improving, too. Before the end of the year, everybody's going to get better and better and better. Why he thinks he's going to be the only team getting better just because they're supposed to is crazy. They got a bad basketball team.
And losing at home is a sin. The Big Ten teams going into last night's game were 43-8, the home team. So losing at home is really damaging in the Big Ten.
It's a game they should have won. And Denny, I know you didn't just say that Michigan, quote, has a bad basketball team. I'm sure you didn't say that, did you?
Yeah, I think they are.
They're average. They're a little better than
what?
Well, they've gone from fourth.
They used to play defense last time, but you know what?
They're average in the Big Ten right now. Okay, they're average in the Big Ten right now.
Yeah, but I think Michigan's a pretty good club. Actually,
2-5 in the Big Ten makes them well below average.
Based upon their record, they're not very good.
Four and seven since the Big
tournament.
Ten.
It's amazing. Have a whole lot of teams in the tournament.
Yeah, but they're 4-7 since, and two of the wins are against nobodies.
Right.
So you know what?
We're not watching the same schedule.
Yeah, you know what kept Michigan in that game on Wednesday night? Patrick Chambers. And this is another thing about college basketball drives me insane. College coaches, most of these guys, it's just they're puppeteers. And we got a guy in East Lansing like this too. They're puppeteers working the puppet strings, thinking fans pay to see them coach. So Penn State's up 15-8 over Michigan, with Lamar Stevens going crazy. He's the fourth leading scorer in the Big 13 plus Rutgers anyway. He's killing Michigan. He's got 9 of Penn State's 15. 4:30 into the game. Thank you, Patrick Chambers. He pulls him. Why? What are you doing? Then he puts him back in 4 minutes later. You know why he did that? Because Michigan tied the game with the kid out of the game. 15-15 when he finally put him back in. Still, Michigan did not play hard, and they didn't play any defense, and I did not like what I saw.
No, nobody liked what he saw. What did Howard say? He was asked afterwards if he's concerned about things snowballing, you know, after they shoot 5 of 28 from three-point range. They're losing. He goes, I got that under control. You can trust me on that one. There's not going to be any doubt in that locker room. We will not lose trust in one another. There's a lot of season to be played. That's what he said. It's January 22nd. But, you know, Pat Chambers is interesting. My niece's best friend is married to him. And she talks about, in Penn State. They're from Philadelphia. The pressure on these, and you know from Bob, college coaches are the most paranoid, looking over their shoulder, uptight guys in the world. They take it, I don't know why, more so than other sports. And Chambers is a hothead. He is a mess.
He's a little guy with a chip on his shoulder, just like, again, that guy who coaches in East Lansing.
Yep. Anyway, speaking of
that. Oh, stop it. There's no comparison.
The last guy. He's a little guy with a chip on his shoulder who gets really pissed.
He's also a champion. He's won title after title.
I love Tom.
You know, so let's take it easy. We can't call him names.
Tom Izzo. Have I made my point? It's just the kind of person that these guys like that are. You know what they're like, for goodness sake.
Coming up, we're going to talk to Mark Howe in a little bit, one of the great members of the hockey family, the greatest hockey family in hockey history. That's redundant. The greatest family in hockey history, who is also leading. He is in charge of scouting for the Red Wings. He's going to have a lot to say about where this club is and where they may be.
So it just dawned on me, if Tom Izzo was 6 inches taller, he'd really like him.
Denny, it's the most classic thing ever in sports.
I
and
love
you,
Bob.
Know what.
Bob,
a
I love
you. Guy, you know, who's always been dumped on. He's had to fight for everything. He's scrappy. He's tough. And boy, is he competitive. You know, I interviewed Brian Brennan after a Browns game. You know, the former Birmingham Brother Roy star had a great NFL career. I interviewed Brian Brennan after a game years ago. And the first question I asked him, I said, I know you're kind of small, but you know, I'm surprised talking with you right now how small you actually are. You know what Brian Brennan said to me in my microphone? Yeah, you think so? I'll kick your ass. And he was serious. There was no smile on his face. That's the kind of guy these little guys are. You know that.
Well,
and by the way, since I mentioned Tom Izzo, I also said that they might lose both these games coming up. Indiana swept Michigan State 2 last year. Bloomington's one of the toughest places in America to play.
Sure,
watch out, and watch out at Minnesota on Sunday.
Let's get into a little football, okay? We got a few minutes to go before we talk to Mark Howe. I'm fascinated with the Super Bowl coming up. Not fascinated, but and by the way, on Monday we're going to talk to Mike Lodich from Birmingham Brother Rice, and you just mentioned Rice, which was Brian Brennan went. He only played 11 years in the NFL and only played in six Super Bowls, won a couple, and he'll talk about
only
those.
Six.
Only six.
How many years did he play? 10, right?
11.
11?
Yeah.
And he only played in six.
He only played in six, right? He was only really a starter 1 year in his career, though he did play a lot of games. There's a lot of guys on a team, and not every superstar gets to go to the Super Bowl, and not every scrub doesn't get to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
I shouldn't call him a scrub. I think
it's
that
an amazing story about him, too, with the candy.
Yeah, because you got to remember that this guy was an All-American player at UCLA. I mean, Mike Lodich was a heck of a player. And by the way, he's got a hysterical personality. So make sure tune in next week on Monday, because as Eli's known him for a long time, they have a great relationship. It's going to be entertaining, fans.
We actually worked, you know, he's had so many different careers since he left football, from like the candy thing to
the peanut brittle king.
And when he first got out of football, he came and did some fill-ins on 90, what's 97.1 now. It was 1270 AM, then it switched to the FM. But you know, we did the show, Kirk and Gary and I, before the Valenti show, and Lodich was there a lot. So we got to shoot the what a lot.
Right?
now he's a great salesman. He's a big guy, 6'3", 270, and he sells big equipment like Caterpillar trucks and stuff.
Is that right?
Yeah, we'll talk to him about
that. And what did you tell him? What did you call him? What did you say he was?
I said he's a big dude selling big trucks. What?
And Mike laughed and said, that's true. So I think the big story here is the other Eli. Who wants to go first? Eli Manning, retiring.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this for a few minutes. I mean, we got to take a break in about 3 or 4 minutes. But I'm fascinated by the quarterbacks. First of all, we're doing the show on Monday, and I see a font, they call it that, or written across a stream. We got ESPN on in the background, and it says, is Pat Mahomes the greatest quarterback of all time? Which is ridiculous to say in a guy's third year. He will be the richest of all time when he signs a 5-year, $200 million deal for $40
million. That'll last for two seasons, and he'll be another richest of all time.
But you know, first of all, I love Eli Manning because he made Eli he's a one name star. There's Pele and there's this and that. He's Eli, you know exactly what they're talking about. So he brought the name into prominence. But like Jeter, he did a great job in New York.
You know, I want to stop you right there. I got to tell you this: if you actually were to go to any sports event at Detroit and say to any fan, "Who's Eli?" they might say Eli Zarrett in Detroit.
In Detroit, they probably would.
They might. Yeah.
I agree. I was lucky to have a unique name.
So toot your own horn, Eli. If you won't, I will.
Okay, that's fine. I appreciate that.
His mom and dad knew what they were doing. They knew there was an Eli Manning coming.
He's a very polarizing figure because his lifetime win-loss was 117 and 117. But in 07 and 11, he won Super Bowls and did it by bringing him back in the fourth quarter and was a major hero in New York, and may get into the Hall of Fame.
Two circus catches by two different mediocre wide receivers, one of whom was Mario Manningham out of Michigan, and Eli Manning does not win those two Super Bowls. There were two circus catches on bad throws.
He threw the ball.
Excuse me. Tom Brady doesn't win two Super Bowls if Russell Wilson doesn't throw the interception on the last play of the game when they had it won, fourth and one on the goal line. He doesn't win another
He's
one.
He's won if, more if, than two.
But he doesn't win win the other one if Atlanta doesn't go back from 28-3 down. And he might not win the one over the Rams last year if they had if a call in the end zone. So yeah, I'm not denigrating Tom Brady. He's been a 9, won 6. He could have won maybe 3.
They're not the same sentence. Just you can't don't, take that. They're just, not the same conversation.
Then don't try and take the Super Bowls away from Eli Manning. But
I'm saying Brady is such a much better player than Eli Manning.
But I don't.
I agree with that.
Eli Manning didn't play with as good a club as what Brady has played with, and didn't play with as good a coach as what Brady has. But the one thing about Eli Manning, he's been a complete gentleman for what 16, 17 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. He's accomplished everything an NFL quarterback can accomplish. Right.
True.
Two Super Bowls.
Yep.
He's a legitimate star, great family guy, and he's a gentleman. No incidents in his life, no fights. His dignity and integrity is going to leave the game with all of it intact.
And when he was
he has to go into the hall.
When he was at the bottom, like in 2013, when they lost the first 6, criticized and booed. In 17, they started out 2-9, criticized and booed. But here's the thing about being a quarterback. Then when they benched him for Geno Smith, the fans come and defend him. So, which again, as I say, the most popular player in pro sports is the backup quarterback. They always love you because they want to see you get a chance. But anyway.
But there's two other things. Number one, the Giants are talking about bringing him back in another capacity after he announces his retirement tomorrow. And then one of the strangest things or most impressive things that I saw, Manning retires ranked in the top 10, listen to this, in completions, attempts, passing yards, and touchdown passes. See, I didn't think he threw that many touchdown passes, but obviously he did.
210.
You don't think the 49ers throw many passes either. We'll get to that in a moment. But boys, think about this. Eli Manning is not as good a quarterback as Drew Brees, not in the same category as Brees. He's thinking about retiring too right now.
Yeah, there's right. But lastly, on Eli, you're right. He's a controversial figure for Hall of Fame. The fact that he's Archie's kid and Peyton's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer this year makes it 210 consecutive starts, a third most by a quarterback, and yes, seventh all time in yards and touchdowns.
But, and he will get in the Hall of Fame.
We'll see.
Absolutely.
Oh, you think for sure?
Yeah.
Imagine that.
As I mentioned on our last show,
Brandon's shaking his head saying no. You don't think so? Well, then again,
Brandon, that's our producer, of course, as you well know. Brandon, he's going in the Hall of Fame.
I just don't think he should. He's got a 500 record.
Well, that's another matter.
I just think that its longevity is the only reason why there's even a discussion
about
it.
Two Super Bowl championships.
Well, but Bob, I thought they're tainted, though. Bobby, you just said that they're tainted because
he was never considered a top quarterback. Any year
he's
played,
going into the Hall of Fame.
He was never considered a top five quarterback.
I think they're going to hold. I think I agree with you.
I know what you're saying, Brandon.
But the fact that Archie and Peyton will kind of slipstream in behind them. Hey,
I actually think I've seen every game that Eli Manning ever played in the NFL, being the Giants guy that I am, and I know what Brandon's saying.
Brandon, let me say this to you, kid. Who loves you more than me, right? Right, Brandon?
Who brings Brandon's you to Hershey bars every day, Brandon?
Who brings you to Hershey bars every week? Twice a week, right? Please listen to me. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
I don't argue that. I just don't feel he deserves it. I feel you throw Matthew Stafford on that team for that long, and he's a Hall of Famer too.
Possibly.
Yes.
But we'll never know.
Well, we will, though.
As long as you brought him up, let me make a point. I think it's time we trade Stafford. Let him go to a club where he can win a ring. Let him go someplace where he can really make a difference.
Let him go.
Give him an opportunity to play football.
Let's talk about that in a second because I do want to talk about quarterbacks that have gone elsewhere and had either great success or not great success at the end of their career.
How about telling me about your car?
Oh, God, do I love my Nautilus. Thanks for bringing it up. What a great car.
That was a good segue.
I got it at Starlink, and of course, I've gotten all my cars for the last decade plus. And I never had an SUV before, but in 2019, Lincoln came up with 3 brand new SUVs to go along with the Navigator. A little too big for me, but it was the 2018 North American Truck of the Year. There's the Nautilus, which I got. A little bigger was the Aviator, and a little smaller is the Corsair. Comfort features, too lengthy to list. The audio is amazing. The Copilot 360 is amazing. That's why I love my Nautilus and why so many critics are raving about these 3 new Lincoln SUVs and why sales went up 20% in 2019. What it comes down to is Pick one that's best for you. Which one of Star Lincoln's Fab Four SUVs will fit your taste and lifestyle? Just visit Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership, Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln, where everyone gets the renowned star treatment at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And Luke Nowacki is also on our all-star team. Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, a wealth provider, a wealth overseer for you. Not sure what the real name is, but he helps people create plans to reach their financial goals. The consultation is complimentary. He'll answer all your financial questions, whether retirement is fast approaching, whether you're young and have to plan for the future, how you're going to take care of your family, what are you going to do with your money and your investments. Call Luke Nowacki at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, 248-663-4748. That's 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, products, and service revenues here independent of Royal Alliance Associates. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So Manning has decided to retire. He's 39. Tom Brady is not going to retire. We're not sure what he's going to do, but very interesting because a lot of great quarterbacks moved on late in their careers. Yep. Joe Namath moved on. Joe Montana moved on. Brett Favre moved on.
And a lot of them really embarrassed themselves.
Really embarrassed themselves, you did. Who didn't embarrass himself was Peyton Manning, went on to win a couple of Super Bowls for the Broncos.
Yeah, but he wasn't the player he was, too. But yeah, I know what you're saying. Go
but
ahead.
He did win.
So Namath said, and I agree with him. He said, it's almost beyond my belief that he would go to another team under any circumstances. He says, I can't imagine that separation. I don't think he'll ever leave that totally behind. And where is he going to go with a coach as good as Belichick, an offensive coordinator that he really believes in and has been there for a while? Why would he go anywhere else if he didn't have a real good chance of winning at age, what, really 43 next year? It just doesn't make sense, but he's open, he's going to listen, and he's going to shop himself and make that decision.
Well, it's a good question. I think he's going to stay. I think when you go to another club, you got to learn all the schemes, all the plans, all the
– Well, clearly he is, because they've already said they want him back and he wants to play.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's made his decision. I think his wife's going to have a lot to do with it. Well, I agree with you for the first time, I think, in a year. I just believe he's in the right place. He's going to stay in the right place. There's no reason for him to hurt his reputation at this point in time. Why go anywhere in the country, NFL, because he can get more money than you can imagine.
Did you just say that the Patriots have openly said they want him back?
Yes.
Yeah, they said absolutely.
We want him back.
Okay. Well, then
absolutely. I want to talk about another quarterback. I want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. I saved Denny the embarrassment of having Brandon McAfee go back and replay the tape from our last show where Denny said that Garoppolo only throws, and I quote, 8 times a game.
I didn't say that. I said in a game he threw 8 passes.
Right? I said that was ridiculous. I'm not taking you through the entire schedule, Denny. Just the first 3 games and the last 3 games of the season, his total passes were 27, 25, 32, 35, 27, and 22. All right.
It doesn't matter. Ryan Tannehill didn't throw the ball a lot either because he had a great rusher in Derrick Henry. If you don't throw the ball a lot, it means you got a very balanced offense. That's good. Yep.
Absolutely. Now, Denny, take the floor, please, because your boy, your favorite boy, is in the news. Hollywood, Florida is not far from me here.
Ah, yes.
Eli comes down, and the Hollywood, Florida Police Department has now issued an arrest warrant for Antonio Brown following allegations that he and his trainer attacked a moving company truck driver near Brown's Hollywood home. Denny McClain, have at it.
Well, I don't have much to say other than this guy just keeps giving. Every week he keeps giving us another story, another chapter, another beating. If it's not a man, it's a woman. I mean, somebody has to put this guy out of his misery. And I don't mean to hurt him. Don't misunderstand me. Listen, but at least lock him up.
Even the Hollywood Police Athletic League severed its ties. But here's the biggest one. Drew Rosenhaus.
Right, he quit.
Wrote a letter to the NFL Players Association that he would like to work with Brown, but not until he first gets help. When the guy you're paying fires you, the guy that you are paying, not the other way, fires you, there is a real problem. And he got into a national snit here with Stephen A. Smith.
Right.
And Stephen A. Smith said, I'm at the point where I'm feeling sorry for what I'm witnessing take place in the life of Antonio Brown. He's clearly not all there. He's all over the place emotionally. Some have speculated they think he has CTE. This nasty thing comes up again. We talk about it all the time. Whether it's Tagliabue getting into the Hall of Fame, whether it's Luke Kuechly, whether Junior Seau gets into the Hall of Fame, by the way, and they never even mention that he shot himself by putting a bullet through his chest like Dave Duerson did so that his brain could be donated to science. So as Smith says, and I agree with him, what's the point? He goes, for me to pounce on him now would be an exercise in cruelty because I know that brother is not right. So, of course, Brown went back at Stephen A. saying, I didn't know words were a crime. How about you come to South Florida? Let's speak quite frankly, meaning I'll meet you in the parking lot, which, of course, is nonsense.
What I don't understand about this relationship that he allegedly has, and I guess they're his children with this young lady, she keeps coming back. Wouldn't you just leave sooner or later? I mean, she's been the subject of a number of beatings from time to time.
But Denny, I'm sure you've read it many times.
Many times.
About battered women, and they're scared or they don't know another way. They're emotionally crippled by this relationship. We've said that over how many women shot their husbands finally after years and years of abuse, and they wind up going to jail for it. It was the only way out they had. So that's,
I understand, but this is a little bit different. This is on a very high stage, a high profile, and somebody should intervene before one of them really gets hurt.
I also want to talk about, if you guys are finished with this.
No, not quite. We have to say goodbye to our radio people first, and you can talk in a minute.
Well, no. I got something to say real quickly.
No.
About another football moron.
Time out. Thank you for listening to WCWA and WDFN.
We'll
catch you next. You catch our next show. We'll be on Tuesday to be able to hear that. But we are going to continue here on the No Filter Sports Podcast. Yes, Bob, what's on your mind?
Somehow, a tweet wound its way to me the other day from one of Brandon's personal heroes, Darius Slay. He's a pretty good player for the FLs, right? Yep. And this is what the tweet said. I quote, ask why, just the letter Y, ask why is ankles not tape, LOL, that said what?
What?
With 5 exclamation points. That's the whole tweet. That's what it said.
Who's that from?
I don't even know what he was talking about.
Who's that from?
I just do want to say, though, that Mr. Slay matriculated at the world-renowned academic institution known as Mississippi State University as a student athlete.
So Slay put that out?
Yes. I just directly quoted the tweet that I saw. I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, Eli and I didn't hear.
I
want to talk about, I can, for a moment here, because Mark Howe is coming up on the show today. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about what I saw Wednesday night, which is not pretty. The Wings folding again, barely limping into this weekend's NHL All-Star break. Blew a lead again, and they lost at Minnesota. Jeff Blashill afterwards said, and I quote, we played stupid. I watched the game on the national TV broadcast over NBC Sports, and I didn't agree. They didn't play at all. And Mike Milbury said that, too. It looks like 3/4 of these guys on the Red Wings have packed it in and quit. NBC listed all the injuries the Wings have had to their regulars. If you look at the guys who were out, though, Andreas Athanasiou has been pathetic this year. Ditto Franz Nielsen. Mike Green looks like he's done too. Jimmy Howard's record now? Hold on to your steering wheels out there, folks. 2-19 with a save percentage down around 87%. He has a little left in the tank, and they've hung him out to dry sometimes, but he should just be a backup. Anthony Mantha would help. Now, Philip Zadina got both Wings goals Wednesday night at Minnesota. Don't get excited. They each were flukes. And in talking about him, Pierre Maguire and Eddie Olczyk said, he's a nice player. But he'll never be more than a 25-goal scorer, maybe 30, for the 6th pick overall in the draft. Brandon, I kind of expected more out of this guy, didn't you?
I think he's young, and I think he can still develop. I mean, obviously, they're going to get a fantastic pick next year. You start combining that with all these young guys, with the leadership of Steve Yzerman, and hell, the future could be bright. The problem is we've been so spoiled over the last 20 years that it's really, 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 really hard to watch them be a terrible basement NHL hockey team. So.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Mark Howe in a little bit.
Patrick Kane Monday night scored a goal against Winnipeg. That was Monday or Sunday. Anyway, he became the fastest American player to ever reach 1,000 points in his career. He's still only 31. Now, 3 other American guys who are right behind him, 2 of them, are Detroit natives. Brandon, you want to take a shot at this?
Mike Modano.
Very good. Yep.
And I would say
Pat LaFontaine.
I would say Eli got that one nailed. Okay. You guys really impressed me with that. Now, I would have also given you credit if you said Jimmy Carson. Three guys we really need to have eventually, by the way, fellas, on this show. Amazingly, Grosse Pointe native Jimmy only had 561 points in his 10-year career. He was traded to Edmonton in that huge deal for Wayne Gretzky. In Jimmy's first season with the Edmonton Oilers, he was only able to manage 49 goals.
Yeah, we definitely should talk to Jimmy Carson.
Mark Howe rushing down the middle, getting in the clear, right in on goal. He passed it off. He scores.
Mark Howe emerged from the huge shadow cast by his father, the incomparable Gordie Howe, to play 16 years in the NHL, also six in the WHA, preceded it, much of it with his brother Marty and, of course, the amazing Gordie in both Houston and Hartford. He was one of the great defensemen in the National Hockey League in the 80s, three-time runner-up for the Norris Trophy, played in the Stanley Cup Finals three times, currently Director of Pro Scouting for the Red Wings, which makes it a very topical story. But as we welcome Mark, first of all, Mark, thanks for joining us, number one.
No, glad to be here. I know we've tried a couple of times, but yeah, with my scouting schedule and all, sometimes makes it difficult. But I got a little break here now with all the All-Star breaks going on.
Well, before we talk about your role with the Wings and hockey today, let's go back to being a kid. Being the son of the amazing Gordie Howe, the greatest player of all time, arguably so, along with perhaps Wayne Gretzky. You played peewee here in Detroit. You played junior hockey. Give us a sense, I mean, you've been asked this a million times, what it was like to be in Detroit and be the son of Gordie Howe and just playing hockey yourself and what that was like as a youth.
I don't know. As far as I looked at it, I mean, it's far back as I can remember, I know I started skating, I guess, when I was two. I played my first organized hockey when I was four at an outdoor arena, Butzel Arena, and then Mom and Dad got together, and they built Gordie Howe Hockey Land over in St. Clair Shores, so that was one of the very first indoor rinks in the state of Michigan, and I've always had a passion for hockey, and as far as being the son of Gordie Howe, I've always explained it the same. Like, Gordie Howe was just, he was my father.
Yeah.
And, I'm very fortunate. I had two wonderful parents. Dad led by example. Mom was the one that ran the house. And she basically taught the foundation of what it's like, what their expectations were, of us as children, both my brothers, my sister, and the thing I appreciated the most, I guess, about both my parents is growing up, they let me experience life. They let me play hockey, make mistakes, do whatever, and they wanted me to learn and analyze and learn by myself. And every once in a while, you need support from your parents, and whenever I needed help or guidance, I would ask, and they were always there for me. So I never looked at my dad as a great hockey player. I think the years that my brother.
Well, let me tell you, he was.
He was, just in case you weren't aware of that. He was pretty good.
I know, but I know the years that we played together. We were 10. I was a forward until I was 24 years of age, and Dad was either the centerman or the right winger on my line, and that's when I really learned to appreciate who Gordie Howe, the hockey player, was. And he was 45 years of age till 52, so I'm watching the guy. Obviously, and he was the MVP of the old WHA his first year, and he could have been a second year. That's how good he is. I'm watching Brady and the stuff he does, and some of the other great athletes in their sports and what they've done into their 40s. And what he was doing at 45 and 50 years of age was just phenomenal to me. And that's when I learned to really appreciate how great he was as a hockey player.
This is Denny McLean. It's good to have you on the show. A couple things. Number one, I did a lot of shows with your dad from time to time years ago. And, boy, he was the quietest man I've ever met in my life. I mean, I'd say hello, and that was it for the next two or three hours.
He's very gracious. He's very gracious and kind.
Yeah. A complete gentleman. I mean, he treated everybody the same way, nicely. He never gave anybody a hard time. Even the promoters, who we'd all like to hit over the head once in a while, as you probably know. Let me ask you this. I mean, my dad died when I was 13. You had a great privilege of playing with your dad. What I can't imagine the thrill that it was to walk out on that ice and skate with your dad.
And your brother, too.
And your brother.
Yeah, well, my brother and I, we played together for all our years growing up together for the most part. And I got to say, Denny, I went to Bernie Junior High School. And years ago,
so did my daughters, because we both lived in Lathrop Village.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
Yeah, well, you came and spoke at the school one time. So I, that's when you were busy winning your 30 games a year, and I said it was, it was pretty awesome experience to have you there. But being able to watch Dad play, and I benefited. I mean, I'm an 18-year-old kid breaking into a league, and you know how difficult that is.
Sure.
And you come in and. So he's on my line. And I wasn't mentally ready yet. I didn't have the confidence, you know, that I had for the first 3 months. He kind of carried me along, and it got me in the groove and got me going. But he was a very quiet, humble man. Even in his latter years when he was struggling with his dementia, sure. People would say, "Well, why do you have him out in the public?" And I said, "Well, when I take him out, I said it's like a light switch going on. He'd get around kids and people and." He just loved to be around people, and the more we kept him away, the worse he got. Yeah. So we had him out there, and now on the ice was a different story. I mean, he was, he hated when I said this. He was the most vicious human being on a pair of skates I ever saw. Marty and I, like, we get together. Marty, we live about 3 hours apart. I'm in halfway between Philly and New York, and he's up in Hartford. And every once in a while, we'll get together. Tell some old stories, and we just kind of go, "Wow, I can't believe he did some of the stuff he did." But he let it be known, and we love it too. I mean, from Wayne Gretzky tells the story the first time played against Dad, and he took the puck, and he said within 5 seconds he said he thought his arm was broken, and Dad looked at him and he said, "Look." He says, "Don't ever take my puck again." And Bobby Orr has stories. I mean, all the greats are the greats. They all remember what Gordie Howe did to them. Now, if anybody, and it's kind of like Marty always referred to it, it's like a badge of honor. But if another player did that to him, you'd probably hate the guy for the rest of your life. But that's kind of the aura that Dad had. And I idolized him as much as anybody my whole life, and I just really appreciate the example he set as a role model for our family, and I really appreciate what he does for the image of athletes in general. He always felt that the athletes needed to give back to the people, and he always gave back.
And your mom certainly set a tone, too. I mean, even at some of the shows that when I saw her and said hello and talked to her for a few minutes once in a while, I mean, she was delightful to be around.
Yeah, she was. And she was a tower of strength within our family. As you said, Dad was quiet, unassuming, and people took advantage of it. And, you know, once Mom kind of got in there, and she ended up being the bad guy sometimes, but she stepped in there, and she defended Gordie. She defended her family. And the other thing she recognized was she knew who Dad was and his popularity. And she made sure Dad got out there in the public. And I learned more about my mother after she passed and going through records and different things. She made Dad get out there and do so many things for charity, and they helped so many different charities around North America that she was a very, very giving person. And, you know, rather than try to acquire and keep all the wealth for themselves, they did more for charity than just about anybody I've ever met.
They sure do.
Well, you know, Cementhead Semenko protected Wayne Gretzky throughout his career in Edmonton. The WHA, when you played for Houston, was a Wild West show, but you and Marty had the ultimate protection, your dad. Did anybody ever try to take advantage of you two and have to answer to your dad on the ice?
Every once in a while. And even if somebody just took me out in a routine play, I'd puck be dumped in, I'd forecheck, I'd finish his check. And for the first month to 6 weeks, I was absorbing the hit, no problem, as part of the game. And then within about a second to 2 seconds later, I get this big, ugh, and it would kind of knock the wind out of me. Well, it's Dad coming to hit the guy who hit me. And how many 18-year-olds tell their father, the greatest hockey player of all time, what to do? So it took me about 6 weeks And I finally told my dad one day, I think we were having dinner at home, and I said, "Dad, look, I got no problem taking the hit in the corner." I go, "But you're killing me when you're coming." I said, "Wait till I get out of the way before you hit the other guy." So, but he did, and I would love to be able to sit here and say I was one of the toughest guys in the league. I obviously wasn't. I was a smaller skill player, and my way of getting back at people was to win on the score sheet at the end of the game. And my brother had a lot more, was much better with his fist than I was. So yeah, Marty be in there sometimes too. And they would do the same for their, for anybody else on the team. But, dad, especially if something happened to one of his two boys, and a couple of the worst things that I ever saw my dad do were dad was retaliating and it was 2 months, 3 months later, he waited. He had the memory of the best elephant in the world. And, but he made people pay a price for what they did.
Name a couple of those guys. Yeah. What did they do to you? And what did your dad do to them? Who were those guys?
Well, actually probably the worst I ever saw. There was, we had a teammate in Houston. It was, his name was Don Larway, wonderful guy. And it was back, I would probably in 75 would be my guess. Back in the day when players drank a little bit more, and well, we had 2 days off, and then our coach, Bill Dineen, called a practice for 9 a.m. on New Year's Day. Well, we had a team New Year's Eve party, and a few of us stayed up rather late, and I came to the rink with a couple guys in the car, and there was two of the players that came into the locker room, and they had a beer in their hand. And I sat down next to, I knew better than that. I mean, I was raised better than that. And I was up all night, but I was fine to practice. Well, I sat down in my stall next to dad, and dad rarely said anything, but he said to me, he said, "Thank God you were smart enough not to do that." And I said, "You raised me better than that." And well, over the course of the scrimmage, Marty, actually, was the first guy to leave the party. Marty and dad, they left around 3 a.m. So Marty was fine, and he's rushing the puck up the ice. So this Don Larraway, who had brought a beer in the locker room, he was casual with a stick, and he cut Marty over the eye for it was like 14, 15 stitches. I mean, a decent gash, but nothing horrible. And so they just kind of cleaned Marty up, and they were going to send him off to get some stitches. And so the coach grabs a puck and they're ready for a face-off. And dad looks at me and he goes, "Let's switch wings for this shift." I said, "Okay, I don't know. I'm just there." And well, he did it to line up against the guy who just cut Marty. Oh, and when the coach dropped the puck, dad took his stick and I don't know how it didn't come out the back of his throat. I mean, what it took out was like 10 or 12 teeth, and it was over 100 stitches.
Oh, my God.
Some of the players took a lot of offense to it, and he said, "Anybody want to blank, blank, blank with me or my boys? Let's go." And like I said, he's 46, 47 years old, and just scared the living tar out of me, I tell you. And it wasn't, and I was like, "My God, I'm not going to." So try to make sure I'm not doing anything wrong when he's around. But like I said, he was a completely different human being on the ice. Off the ice, like I said, he might have been as nice a person as there's ever been on the face of the earth.
Absolutely.
You played 22 years. Of course, that pales to Gordy's 32. So, you've kind of, even though you had an amazing career yourself, had to be in his shadow somewhat. But to play 22 years, and tell me how unusual it was. You started as a left wing and then became a very competent defenseman. How does that happen, and how unusual is that for somebody to play offense and defense over the course of a career in hockey?
I don't know. I guess it happens periodically to some guys. I think the biggest reason it happened for me was the two leagues merged together in 79-80 season, and we were off to a rocky start in Hartford. I think we were 0-4 or something like that. And actually, we were playing a game in Buffalo. In the morning, I skated on the left wing with Dad, and I forget who the other player was. And then we come in for the game, and so we got to the rink around 5:15, 5:30, and the lineup's on the board. And because back then they didn't tell you who was playing or whatever, who was sitting out. And my name was up on the board on defense. So I thought one of the players were messing around, so I went and erased my name and put it back on the left wing. Then the coach came in, and he goes, "Who the hell's messing with the board?" And I said, "Well, I'm really playing defense tonight." And So, and that's, I'll never forget, my very first shift was against Gilbert Perreault. And the puck popped out, it's one-on-one, and I'm in my head, I'm going, oh, Lord, please help me now. And he ended up losing the puck, I fell on it, and I had to change, and I was 15 seconds into the shift. So, and it took me a few years, but when you play defense, you can play a lot more. You can be on the ice more, and I always assess myself as my best asset was my speed, my ability to win puck battles, and I was a good passer. So when the puck's in your end, you win the race. As you get to the puck, you get it going the other way. You're not going to get scored on very much when the puck's in the other end of the rink. So I went from playing like 22, 23 minutes a night as a winger to playing 28 to 29 minutes a night. And then by the time I got to Philadelphia and then we had Mike Keenan, I know for four or five years, my average ice time was 32 and a half minutes a game. So. Wow. You build up and then you get into your core years and Mike rode some players and you work hard to get into that role. You want to be one of the leaders on the team. You want to be a difference maker. So they gave me the opportunity and I relished it.
Did you hate playing for Mike Keenan like most guys?
It was a few months ago. All those stories were coming out, stories about coaches and what they had done and this and that and everything else. And I felt like saying, God, you should have heard the stories from the guys in the 40s and 50s, what they had to endure. Mike was hard. Mike was good for some guys. He was really tough on young guys. He did a lot of things. But like I say, when I met him, I asked him for more ice time. And he would test people all the time. It was an everyday test. It wasn't a one-day thing, so I remember
mind games all the time.
Every day. I said, every day I got in my car, I put my key in the ignition, and I said, I never knew what the hell was going to hit the fan when I got to the rink that day, and that's how it was. But all the guys that I know that I played with in Philadelphia, we had some pretty good teams here, they all have their stories of what Mike Keenan did to them. You ask all those guys now, do they harbor hard feelings? No, I don't think so. So as a matter of fact, we had scouting meetings with the Red Wings 2 years ago down just north of Miami. And Mike was down in Key West. I had heard he had prostate cancer. And so I knew a guy who was going down there, was writing a book for Mike. And he said, do you want to come visit? And I said, you sure he wants me there? And I just... So I had an afternoon off. I went down there and shook his hand. I said, look, I said, you owe me dinner and drinks for all the crap you put me through for 4 years, and let's have a good time. So he was good for my career. He wasn't so good for maybe a few other careers. But the bottom line was you hate to lose. You like to win. And our teams won under him. So I could never complain about that.
Well, you came here in 92, played with the Red Wings. You were 37 years old at the time, and the Flyers granted you some free agency. You played under Scotty Bowman here. And you also, you're credited with being a steadying influence on Nick Lidstrom. I suppose you get into your late 30s, you see a guy like him come in. Did you spot Nick right away to be the star he was? And do you feel good that you were able to help him develop into the amazing player he turned out to be?
Yeah, well, I'd like to take credit for that, but not Nick. Yeah, Nick was pretty darn good. So I had the opportunity. I roomed with Nick, and I'd be remiss if I didn't also say a real good friend of mine who passed, Brad McCrimmon. He was brought in the year before, and we were both kind of mentors for him and also Vladimir Konstantinov. And it was a great experience for us and to get a chance to watch those guys play and develop and grow. And I knew Nick was going to be really good. I didn't know he was going to be as good as what he was. I mean, the thing that was so amazing about him is, I think he went like 6 years, 7 years every game I went to. I never saw him make a mistake. Hmm. It's not that he was elite or he wasn't the greatest player every night. He was just played at such a high level and never made a mistake. I mean,
the perfect human being, Mark.
Yeah, wonderful guy. So, it's nice. He's another guy, nicest person you could ever want to meet. So he had a respect for everybody and for his teammates, for the fans. And like I said, I can't say enough good things about him. And I laugh with Vladdy. So, I mean, that's so unfortunate with his accident in the limo. But he, when we roomed together, and at the time when you grew up in the 50s, 60s, you're trained to just hate the Russians. So I mean, here's a guy who you like, and when you played against these guys in the 70s, you just I wanted to hurt people, and that's not me. I just when you played him, you wanted to physically hurt somebody and put them in a hospital if you could. And, so I ended up rooming with this guy. He might have been the funniest human being I've ever met. So, like I say, when we lost him, I bet you that hurt the Red Wings so bad, not only for losing him, but all the trades and all the things we had to do to try to replace him. And it wasn't until we got Chris Chelios that we were actually able to fill the role that he had filled. And so it cost the team, it cost the hockey team a lot of draft picks. Choices and it so that hurts your future too when you do that. But both were wonderful people.
Let me ask you this: have you got any feelings about the number of foreign players, that international players now that are in the NHL rather than Canadians and Americans?
I know it's a staggering number. So especially compared to when I started, I mean, you might have had maybe one European or maybe two. I remember Anders Hedberg and Alf Nielsen went into Winnipeg, and it was and they were really good players. But I mean, that was just a very rare thing. A guy told me a couple of years ago. He said if people that are becoming of retirement age past players like NHL alumni, they said going back like 25 years, there's just as many Europeans as there are North American players. So it's a pretty big number for sure.
Hey, you've been a scout for the Wings for over 20 years now. You got the rings back there as a pro scout in the 97, 98, obviously 02 and 08. What is your role exactly? Your director of pro scouting? What does that mean, Mark?
I think that's mostly in title. I think under Kenny Holland, I had a little bit more input with trying to monitor. We got like five guys on the staff, and since Steve Yzerman and Pat Verbeek come in, Pat more or less kind of oversees a lot of things. But it's still very much a team effort. Like I said, it's not slandered at all, but I have a job to do. I got eight teams out east to watch. I got their farm teams to watch. Steve's brother, Chris, watches the other teams in the east. We kind of overlap, help each other out. And we got Kurt Malpe and Kyle McKinnon working out west, and Bruce Harrelson's been around forever. So right, Bruce is 70. He's working out of Phoenix. So that's primarily the staff. And but Pat Verbeek's a very hard worker, as is Steve. And Pat we put lists together, and Pat kind of goes in and watches and kind of has the final word on things. So it's like I said, we just finished our meetings, and you know, I said, even though the Red Wings are having an extremely dismal year, we left the meetings. I left the meetings feeling positive. I strongly believe in what Steve and Pat are doing, and they both work extremely hard. Even Steve, as general manager, is extremely knowledgeable, not only players in the NHL, but American League and the amateur draft. He spends a lot of time, and he's sticking with his plan, and I believe in his plan. And it's it's a year or two away, but it's something I think is going to really benefit the team in a couple of years.
And I don't want to make this sound sarcastic or a joke, but what are they trying to do? I mean,
I know.
That's a good question, Denny.
This is tough to watch. I'm telling you.
Oh no kidding. It's really hard to watch. So. We have some guys that are in the last year of their contract that are having injury problems, difficult year. And, you know, and we've known since Nick Lidstrom retired, we know we've had a void on defense. We got some guys coming along. But as you know, it's very difficult for kids that are 18, 19, and 20 to come in and play. I think we're encouraged by what we have in Grand Rapids. We got some guys that they're going to play. Right now, I think it's just a tough environment in Detroit. And there's a couple of kids in GR that I think could come up and play in Detroit right now. But is it the best thing for them? No, I agree that it's not the best thing for their development.
Well, who are those two kids then, if you think they can come play right now, if they're good enough?
Well,
who
are those guys? Definitely Zeider right now.
Really? He's 18 years old.
Yes, I think he's a really, really good prospect. The first game I saw him play, we were playing an exhibition game against Chicago. In Chicago, he played 26 minutes. He matched up against the Taves and Kane line and did more than hold his own. They're excited like anybody. His play dropped off a little bit. He went to the World Juniors. Every word I got from people from other teams is probably the best defenseman in the world that's not playing in the NHL right now.
Wow.
So, he's a young kid. So he's going to be an important part. Rasmussen's down there trying to regain his game back from it was a difficult year for him last year. And we got Delano. We got a couple other young defensemen coming. And our goaltending's been a little erratic, to say the least. I know Jimmy Howard's had a very tough year. And Mike Green, Daly, Erickson, they've been all out with injuries all year. I think Hronek's taken a step up.
Here's the guy I want to ask you about. I want to ask you about Dennis Cholowski, because a year ago you looked at that kid and thought, this is the next star Detroit Red Wings defenseman. Hadn't happened.
No, not yet. He got off to a good start last year, but if you look at the one column, it's a big minus. So last year, I think about the middle of the year, I think he was close to minus 24. He was just struggling a little bit with trying to keep the puck out of his net. And so, and I know they recalled him, but that's, and I know when I used to be a little bit in player development when I first retired, I used to tell every defenseman that you learn how to keep the puck out of your net, and you can play for any team in the NHL for as long as you want to play.
Sure.
Once a coach trusts you, and that's the one thing that Dennis has to learn. And and it's just tough to learn it in Detroit right now because the team is just frankly not very good, both because of lack of talent and also because of key injuries at key positions. I think most people feel it's probably not the best place for him to be. How are you going to gain any traction to get better? I think we feel it's very important for this organization that we're hoping Grand Rapids gets in the playoffs and these guys can go on a little bit of a playoff run and build off of that in the summer. And hopefully some of them will challenge for a roster spot next year. You know, I also heard that, and without a doubt, we're getting one of the top four picks no matter. It'd be nice if we could win the lottery one time instead of going back two, three spots every year, which makes a massive, massive difference.
Sure.
But we're going to get a good player this year.
Yeah,
so the word I've heard, the top four guys are good players. Whether he can play in Detroit as an 18-year-old is another thing, but we're definitely going to get a good player for the future.
Yeah, and I'm going back to him, not trying to be sarcastic, but God almighty, what's happened to Jimmy Howard?
Well, he's old.
That's not the point. If he's so old, then put him in a car and send him home.
That's not true. I know when I got to Detroit, I was 37, and I had some injury problems. But
you were Gordie Howe's son.
but you're still there battling. For me, it just comes down to a pride factor. So, guys, and if Jimmy has any hopes of playing beyond this year, he's got to get his game back. And it's not all him. I mean, the team in front of him struggles. There's some sloppy play. Every night I sit and watch the replays of the goals, and I can't blame them all on the goalie.
Sure.
So,
I understand.
It's the coaching staff. It's the guys up above. It's the scout. It's the whole thing. But like I said, I do strongly believe in the program that Steve Yzerman and Patty Verbeek are running here in Detroit, and it's going to pay dividends. The hard part is it's a couple years away before you start seeing the result. I do think for sure, though, that the thing that's disappointing this year is the team is not competitive. Winning and losing is one thing, but not being competitive on a nightly basis, I think that's what they want to change more than anything.
There's a lot to be concerned about, obviously, but I will say this, and I'm not just patronizing you and the Wings, but all four pro teams are suffering right now. I believe in the fan base of Detroit and maybe the media too. The Wings, as poorly as they're playing, I think there's more trust in ownership and the administration that they can turn this around than we have of any of our other three teams.
Maybe.
Yzerman, Verbeek, and, of course, it would include you and your scouting staff, too. Hey, thanks for joining us, Mark. Appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
And terrific. You. Thank you.
All right, great, thanks, guys. Buddy. All right, thanks. Take
have
care.
A great day.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Super.
All right, I got not much on the mailbag today. You want to get to this right now, real quickly?
Go ahead. We could go ahead.
So here we go. You can send us whatever notes you want at asknofilter@gmail.com. And here's one Rich sent us. An excellent article on the accomplishments of Jerry Gross, who's now 81, still living in his native Bay City, Michigan. Remember him? 5'9 quarterback, one heck of a player at the University of Detroit, MVP of the Senior Bowl. Never made it in the NFL. So Rich writes, I'm a proud U of D alum, have a daughter there now. I grew up in Bay City. I've been listening to every show you guys do since last spring. Please keep up the entertainment, and I can't wait for Jerry Ball or Bobby Higginson to be on. Now, you know what? I don't know about you guys. I never saw a University of Detroit football game when I was a boy. Now, you guys know the campus, and most of our listeners do too. The stadium was where that huge parking lot is right in front of Callahan Hall. The Lions had guys like Larry Vargo and Bruce Maher, who played at the UD. Maher was a 5'9 safety, pound for pound, one of the toughest guys ever in the NFL. He'd run his head through a brick wall to hit you. The Colts had Steve Stonebreaker, and the legendary coach Ted Marchabrota was a great quarterback at the University of Detroit in the early 1950s. A lot of people don't know Detroit ever had a football program. 760-89-BALLS is our hotline. I quote here from an unnamed texter, Eli negates any negative story on Harbaugh. Not relevant.
So not true.
Bashing Bob for bringing up Harbaugh and Richard Sherman on the last show. So blue wall media. Disappointed, Eli. Thought you were not sheep like Bob Wojciechowski and Angelique Trufelli.
Do I really defend Jim Harbaugh? I don't defend Jim Harbaugh.
I don't think any of us really
I just thought that story was getting...
No, I don't agree with that either.
I thought the story was getting...
You didn't like the story. That's all it was.
Well, the one thing, too, is Jim has not done a good job. I'm sorry. I mean, he's not what we expected to produce.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. No, I don't think I don't. If
well, you haven't been mean or nasty to anybody.
I do not gratuitously defend him. So I don't know what people are. Did you say? Would you say the number again? I thought you missed a digit. What number?
760-89-BALLS.
Okay, there you go. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Right, okay, and now we have Stan from Windsor, who says the outrage over Derek Jeter not getting 100% of the HOF vote is fake as hell. Just made up so social media pundits and ESPN have something to talk about for the day. Who really cares? Which is what Denny said. Ruth, Gehrig, Mantle, Aaron, the greatest ever played, did not get in with 100%. Plus some of the other greats like Bond, so on and so forth. Pete Rose, we know, he says the whole thing is a joke.
Well, that was interesting, though. Denny, you made a point that I hadn't thought of. And that was that the voter, not that he didn't think he deserved the Hall of Fame,
right.
But he didn't list him as 15, one of his 15, because he didn't want him to be unanimous.
Right.
So I get that as a statement as opposed to
it's an
a opinion.
Personal thing
yeah,
of some
I get
kind.
It. I get
right.
it. Okay.
Yeah. Now you can tweet us individually at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. And here's Iffy the Dopester. he posted a really interesting picture. And I want to bring this up.
I love
not that it was a great picture. It wasn't. I want to ask Denny about this because we've never discussed it. It's a picture of John Fetzer at a Tigers game. We've talked a lot about Jim Campbell and your relationship with him, but
sure.
never about longtime Tigers owner John Fetzer. What was he like?
John Fetzer was one of the nicest people I've ever met. He never came around much, maybe once or twice a year, and every time they'd have the Tiger dinner at the end of the year, whoever they announced as the MVP of the Tigers for that year, they would honor that guy. And I was honored one year, and they called me up to make my little speech, and I got in the middle of my speech, and I used the word F in my speech. I didn't mean it, because men and women, this is, the middle 60s.
Yeah,
you don't use that language.
No.
And I almost passed out when I realized what I'd said. And after the dinner, I went up to Mr. and Mrs. Fetzer, and I said, please let me get down on my hands and knees and say, I'm so sorry for using that word. And Mr. – well, I won't say what Mr. Fetzer said totally, but Mr. Fetzer said, well, Mrs. Fetzer also uses that word, and I'm not offended.
Yeah. Actually, well, go ahead.
Now, he had himself cryonically suspended. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Like Ted Williams, although I think it was a whole body thing with him. So he was kind of quirky, wasn't he, Fetzer?
He was he was introverted, to say the least. He just did not like crowds. The only guy he really talked to when he came to the ballpark would be – a K-line or a cash. He never sought anybody except Jim Campbell, and Campbell did a hell of a job for him. I mean, just did. You know, what everybody needs to know, and I'm sure most do, especially you guys, Jim worked 24-7. I mean, Jim was an animal when it came to running the ball club, 24-7. Oh, yeah.
So that was his whole life. He was married to him, yeah.
His whole life. Yeah. He was married to it 100%.
He was. Yeah, I knew Fetzer a bit. He was visible, more so than a lot of owners.
But not talkative.
No, not talkative.
But now, did you ever go out to dinner with him? Did he have any role in your negotiations at all?
No, absolutely none. The only time you saw him was at this dinner.
He was very formal, very distinguished, and I loved how Sparky would call him Mr. Fester instead of Mr. Fetzer. But.
And he always had a shirt and tie on. Never, ever did I ever see him in anything but a shirt
I met
and
him
tie.
A few times myself, but you're right. I never got anything out of him. And then the only thing I remember about Fester, the best thing, is when the Tigers called us, Eli and me anyway, down to their offices one day, said there was a news conference. Wouldn't say what it was about. So dutifully, I went down to the news conference. In walks John Fetzer. With some guy I'd never seen before. He sits down and all he says is, "The Detroit Tigers have been sold."
Oh, that's right.
What did you just say? What? That's right. And then he introduced Tom Monahan.
Yeah.
At that time.
I mean, we were there, weren't we, buddy?
I think so. I think so.
Yeah. Denny, you got an appearance this weekend. Where's it going to be?
I'm going to be in Waukegan, Illinois, just outside Chicago, and I'm going to be with Brian Urlacher, and we're going to be with a bunch of the 86 Bears Saturday from noon. Now, listen now, it's noon to 6. It's a strange time, but it's noon to 6, and everybody will be there for the 6 hours.
By the way, did you mention asknofilter@gmail.com? You can write to us that way also.
Yeah, I think I did that too.
My only note here, as I was looking at the my final sports note of the day, was the Mets are going to name Luis Rojas as the new manager. I don't know a lot about him. He never played in the major leagues.
You're going to tell the story about Alou?
Yes. He is the son of Felipe Alou. And even people who aren't baseball fans, Alou, A-L-O-U, is a very popular crossword puzzle name.
The name is actually Alou. It's not Alou. It's not Alou.
What are you talking about, though?
Philippe Alou, Matty Alou, and Jesus Alou. However you want to pronounce it, that's how we pronounce it in baseball, is Alou. But I thought it was very interesting because it had to do with his birth certificate.
Yeah.
You know, it's had Rojas on it, so they decided to change your name just to play it safe.
I got one more comment to make. Williamson. I've been watching this video.
Yeah, Zion Williamson, right.
You know what? He's as wide as he is tall. He's a monster out there. This kid will set records like we've never seen before if he stays healthy.
Yeah, he came in for his debut on Wednesday night for the Pelicans against the Spurs and started out very poorly, as you'd expect. He hadn't played since last year and came back in the fourth quarter. It was amazing. Scored 17
points. I want
to
close now by telling you a very brief but true story. Some guy on a wall once wrote down, "Jesus is the answer." Another wag comes along and writes, "Yes, but what is the question?" Third guy comes along and writes, "Besides Felipe and Matty, who was the third Alou brother?"
That's right.
Felipe, true story, folks.
I think Felipe was the best. He was the oldest. Yeah. Matty Alou was a little left-handed hitter for the Giants.
They could all hit.
They sure could. Hey, thanks for joining us today, everybody. We'll see you on Monday as we preview Super Bowl week. Talk to the very colorful Mike Lodish from Birmingham Brother Rice, who played in no fewer than 6 Super Bowls.
And everybody listening, bet your house in Kansas City.